The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
And hello, listener. Welcome to another episode of the Perth Football Podcast, Women's NPL Show. I'm your host and producer, Kalicho Sunu, and joining me, Mr. Football WA. He's had a huge weekend of covering football. I think he said he saw something like 300 goals over the weekend. It's Tommy Dolman. Tommy, how are you?
I'm good, Kalicho. Not quite 300, but 19 across Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I was a very lucky boy.
You would have been selling goal like right the way through, or filled with alliteration.
So the funny thing was, I did radio on the World Football Program on Saturday morning, and I made a bold prediction that there would be 30 goals in the MPL WA men's competition on Saturday afternoon across the six games. We got to 26, so we got pretty close, but little did I know, we did get to 30, but in the women's competition in only four games. So I'm going to claim a half point on that one, I think, even though I wasn't strictly true with it being the same competition.
I'll absolutely give you that one, mate. But first and foremost, before we get started for the rest of the show, we are brought to you by the good people at Macron, and they sponsor a Macron Moment of the Week. So Tommy, across women's football this week, what was your Macron Moment of the Week?
Macron Moment of the Week for me was really easy. An absolute banger from Daisy McAllister for Perth Soccer Club early on in the game on Sunday afternoon at UWA Netherlands. She picks the ball up from Ella Lincoln, 25 yards out from goal, and it's a pure strike. Whipped, top corner, loads of power. Difficult for any goalkeeper to get to in any competition, any league of the world, I suspect, with the power and the direction to which she hit it. And it's a nice story, I suppose, to see her back in the MPL. She was a former NTC player. I remember seeing her there in the inaugural season of the MPL WA Women's Competition when I was calling. And she disappeared for a couple of seasons. But then upon doing some research for a Perth game a couple of weeks ago, I learned that she was at Ashfield playing in the women's side there. And she'd scored almost 20 goals playing in that competition. So she's obviously felt like she's ready to come back to the MPLW, and if she keeps scoring goals like that, she's going to be a very welcome returnee.
Yeah, she won the Footballer of the Year for Ashfield that season as well. So yeah, super stoked for her, and great to see her playing at the highest level. It's an outstanding goal. So if you haven't seen the goal, go check it out, ladies and gentlemen. For me, my Macron Moment of the Week was all of Fremantle, just the entire game, the entire team effort that they had. We got to see them play. Obviously, from my end, I made a couple big predictions about them looking outside the top four for the first time in a long time, and then going down and actually being at the game and seeing just how young that team is in terms of 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds. I wouldn't be shocked if they had a couple 16-year-olds in there, but just realizing how young those players were. And it's been a pretty trialing week for the team and for the coaching staff, and the amount of unity that they had and the way that they bounced back. There was this awesome moment, and I think Emma Smith shared it, where they all just huddled together at the end of the game, and you could just feel the camaraderie coming out of that. So I just thought that was my my favorite moment of the week, as well as the Meraki's telling a certain person where to go for a comment that they made on the Facebook page, which you can listen to on the end of our men's podcast as well, if you want to check that out. But that is the end of our Macron Moment of the Week, brought to you by the good people of Macron. We'll get straight into it. Tommy, you talked about this a little bit on the full-time whistle, but have a little bit more to talk about it today. The week started on Friday with a football friends derby. And I know when I looked at it and tipped it, I looked at history and the fact that the NTC and Ben Anderton just kind of had the edge over Pete Rackage for the last few seasons. I think it was only maybe one win in, I want to say 2.5-3 seasons. So I was a little bit surprised that it turned out that way. 4-2 was a final score, but I think it was a little bit more close and a much more entertaining game from your perspective as well, Tommy.
Yeah, it was. I thought NCC started the game really well, but then Balcatta got the jump on NCC probably in the first half an hour of the game. They looked the more dangerous probably after those first 3 or 4 minutes, and their evening was launched really by 2 first-half goals from Lucy Jerram and then from Abby Meekins. Just on Meekins as well, she scored for the 4th NPL WA game in a row, the first 4 games of the season. A couple of those have been from the penalty spot, admittedly, but she's only the 2nd player in the NPL women's era in the 5th season to do that, behind Kat Jukic and Larissa Walsh just scoring her first 4 games of a season. So that's a super impressive achievement from her. And I suppose she's obviously coming back from a position where she missed the back end of last season with an arm injury, and she's definitely making up for lost time if the performance I saw on Friday night was anything to go by, because I thought she was outstanding on the night. And look, Balcatta were in a really good spot early on, and I thought they had really good control of the game. They led 2-0 at the break, and it was looking pretty comfortable. But then Ben Anderton introduced some substitutes who really complimented Mia Britton, who scored the goal to get them back in the game. I thought she was absolutely outstanding. She was one of the best players on the pitch. She was the one that was looking most likely all night long for NTC. And she's a player with real pace and directness, and she's always got an eye for goal. And we've not quite seen her have the goal output I think she's capable of, but she's always a menace when she's running with the ball, and she's always very good in counter-attacking situations. And on the weekend, we saw her actually drive into the box and score a fantastic finish, curled over Rebecca Bennett into the net. So that made it 2-1, and Balcatta were able to get in front again, but NCC really kept fighting in the second half, and it was another one of their substitutes in Theodora Moutius, another exciting player who pulled it back to 3-2 with 6 minutes left. And NCC battled really hard, but the door was sort of slammed shut on them. Last kick of the game by Monique Prinsloo with a close range finish. And I suppose to give you a stat on Monique Prinsloo as well, she's actually scored in a Balcatta versus NCC fixture in all 5 seasons of the NPLWA women's competition. And 2 of those were for NCC in 2020 and 2021. And obviously the last 3 seasons, she scored in a Balcatta NTC game for Balcatta. So I hope the listeners have been able to sort of follow what I've said there, but a couple of nice little stats there. And I thought it was a good bounce back win for Balcatta, obviously after that defeat last week to Perth, which I'm sure would have been a little bit of a surprise to them. Maybe a defeat they weren't expecting this early into the season, but they bounced back really well and found their goal scoring touch. And I think NCC, even after a slowish start, can take a lot of credit and a lot of confidence out of the way they fought in that second half, because it would have been quite easy for a young side to roll over at 2-0 down and go down 4-1 or 5-1. But I think props to Ben Anderton and his substitutions and his tweaks within the game. There were some good performances and some good impact and some players who stepped up to the mark as well. So I think a pretty good night for all team, for both teams, but in various parts. But Balcatta probably the more happier, obviously, with the win and the bounce back ability.
Before we go on to talk or to listen to Ben Gilby, who's sent us a lovely snippet of what he's watched over the weekend, I just wanted to ask you, from a Balcatta perspective, we talked about how they had a little bit of difficulty playing through the midfield in the last game against Perth, and obviously knowing that this is a Ben Anderton-led side and just the midfield that young NTC has. Did they have a little bit more success playing through the middle? Was it a little bit more controlled in their build-up and how they were dictating play from Balcatta?
I think what Balcatta have that really works in their favour is they have a lot of adaptability, and they've developed what looks to be a pretty fluid system. So you're seeing occasions where Lucy Jerram is the lone striker up front, but then you're also seeing her peel into wide positions where she can use her pace, get to the byline and put crosses in. You're seeing Abby Meekins dropping into the hole as a number 10, as a pivot to create. One of the goals, the 3rd goal, was where she released Monique Prinsloo, who then had the shot which led to Faye Phillips's goal. Faye Phillips played most of the game on the left wing, but then got into central positions as well. Monique Godding started centrally and peeled into wider positions, as we saw with her assist for Abby Meekins' goal. Jamie Lee Gale was just a player who can do a job in absolutely any position. She's such a good footballer. So, and Katarina Jukic as well also started the game. She was in a little bit of a deeper lying role, but we know that when she gets to the edge of the area, she's very creative as well. So I think it's a bit more of a fluid system that I think Pete's looking to try and implement this season based on what I've seen in the early part of the season. We saw a lot of possession at Perth in his last teams there, and they'd often have a lot of the ball. And whilst they did create a lot of chances within games and couldn't finish them, I think the quality of the chances that they're getting at Balcatta is really what the difference is between his Perth team of last season and his Balcatta team of this season. And that's down to players such as Jerram and players such as Gale, who have come into that system, the existing players that he did have last season of Meekins and Godding and Phillips. And what you're starting to see now is a really nice team developing.
Well, look, we teased it, an interview with Ben Gilbey. But before we do that, Tommy, you actually had an interview from this game as well.
I did. I caught up with Abby Meekins after her performance on Friday night, which saw her score for a fourth successive MPLW women's game in a row.
And you can hear that right now.
Perth Football Podcast, Tommy here at Grindleford Reserve, now the home group stadium, I believe, after what was a really fun and fast-paced game on Friday night under the lights between Balcatta Etna and Hyundai NCC. Balcatta led 2-0, NCC kept fighting back, and eventually Etna were able to win by 4-2 to go second ahead of the rest of the weekend. I'm joined by one of the goal scorers tonight in Abby Meekins. Abby, well done. A very good first half performance, but you knew that you were going to have to fight really hard against that NCC side tonight, didn't you, to get over the line?
Yeah, definitely. You know, NTC are such a talented team, and it's always such a tactical battle between the two teams, because we know Ben's got them all, you know, set up and ready to play against us. So, yeah, really impressed with the performance. You know, we kept a bit disappointed after last week, but really proud of the girls today.
How important was that first start tonight? Lucy Jerram and yourself got the goals in the first half to make it 2-0 and put yourselves in that sort of position of power. Was that something that was spoken about, obviously, in terms of wanting to bounce back from last week?
Yeah, definitely. We probably think through night series and the first few games of the league, we've probably started a little bit slow and then, you know, come out firing in the second half. So we really wanted to bring the energy from the first whistle and get on top of the game before leaving it too late, like we probably did last week. But yeah, really well done to the girls.
Another goal for yourself as well. That's a goal in each of your first four games in the MPLWA women's competition this season. Katarina Jukic and Larissa Walsh are the only two other players to do that. So tell me about how you feel about that achievement.
Yeah, really good. I mean, probably the change in formation has probably helped free me up a little bit. I mean, there's been a couple of spot kicks, but it's always nice to get on the score sheet and be super consistent with it. So, yeah, really proud, you know, getting back after injury from last year. Pretty frustrating. So, yeah, it's been a good start to the season.
That was my next question, actually. You obviously missed the back end of last season with that arm injury, and you've sort of told me before about how frustrating it was because it was such an innocuous thing that wasn't really a football sort of action, but it just sort of happened. It ruled you out of the season. So is there that sense that you're really looking to try and make up for lost time this year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, last season was obviously frustrating for a lot of reasons. We probably had, you know, 8 or 9 of our starting 11 out with serious injury throughout the season. And yeah, frustrating injury with an arm, you know, there's not much you can do. But yeah, it's good to be back playing and really enjoying the football this year.
Tell me about the move back to Balcatta. Obviously, you used to play here before, so it's a little bit of a homecoming for yourself. A couple of other players like Monique Godding as well have also been here in the past. But what was it about coming back here again with Pete and sort of trying to continue on what you've done over the past couple of seasons at Perth with him?
Yeah, so I probably only played 2 games about Balcatta the last time I was here, did my ACL. So yeah, it's nice to be back. Obviously, got a lot of good friends in the side, and I love playing under Pete. So it's been a really good start to the year. Love the football we're playing and just want to continue on for the rest of the year.
And last one, it was an awesome crowd here tonight. I don't know if it was like a community event that you guys have done with your juniors, but whatever it was, it definitely worked because there was plenty of people here, there was plenty of noise, loads of kids screaming around me, which made my job a little hard at times. But a really good atmosphere on the whole, and it must be something with this Friday night football this season that you're hoping to see a lot more of this season as it continues.
Yeah, definitely. It's great that we've got the lights now so we can play these night games this season. We've been seeing like a big attendance in a lot of the NPL women's games to start the year, and we had a big crowd throughout night series too. So yeah, we hope it can continue as we love playing here. We pretty much, I think, won most games that we played here, so want to continue on being hard to beat at home.
Well done, Abby. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, Tommy, and thank you, Abby, for that interview. As we teased earlier, Ben Gilbey sent us a quick little snippet of some of the games that he watched on the weekend. The Spellcatter game is one of the games, but he also teases a great article that he writes about Violet Longmore coming up from Margaret River and coming up and playing in Perth. So we'll have that little snippet as well as a conversation talking about the Spellcatter game. You can hear that right now.
So here is my view of the NPL Women's competition this week. And it began really on Wednesday when I published an interview I did with Violet Longmore from the Hyundai NTC on Impetus. As she told her story, really coming from the Margaret River region to be selected into the NTC programme. She trialled at the age of under 14 and then was travelling from Margaret River into Perth three times a week, missing school and doing homework in the car to make the progress that she has. And she's developing continually into a really outstanding player. It's a really fascinating chat where Violet was talking about how she was initially really daunted about being a country player and feeling how she had to match and beat actually the skills that the players hailing from Perth and the more metropolitan areas were having to perform at in order to get broken into that NPL team. And she really emphasises how the biggest challenge she's had so far in her career is making that move from country football to metro football, and detailing the massive jump that she had to make in terms of the training environment and the quality and also the standards of the opposition. And on top of that, her story of coming back from being injured at the start of the night series last year and how she was really influenced by that strong spine of the team that was so successful with the NTC last year, with the likes of George Casti, Grace Johnston, Lily Bailey, Tanika Lala, Iskia Brooking, and so on. She was really inspired by that, and you can see that development in her play this year. I think the most interesting thing towards the latter part of the interview was how Violet was detailing how she has to deal with, and her teammates have to deal with, that challenge of coming up week in, week out against really experienced opposition players in the NPL, and some of whom, of course, have had A-League women experience, and how they're having to band together as being a smaller physically team that lack a little bit of physicality, and also sort of having to have the confidence to feel that you can not only match it with some of these experienced, hardened players, but also beating them. So that interview was a really fascinating insight into Violet's development as a player, but also the challenges that she has overcome on the way. In terms of the actual round four action, two games in particular stood out for me this week. First of all, the one on Friday night at Grindleford Reserve with Balcatta Etna defeating Hyundai NTC 4-2. Whilst, of course, the NTC went into the game without a number of players, it was an impressive performance offensively by Balcatta. I think the thing that I think turned it for me in the game was around about the 10-15 minute mark, when Faye Phillips suddenly stamped her authority on the game for Balcatta. She began to link up that play with real craft, bringing the likes of Abby Meekins and Lucy Jerram into the play, and also, of course, Jamie Lee Gow too. And it was once those players all got involved with Faye Phillips the catalyst initially, then that's when Balcatta went to build that early lead. But I think for me, the most interesting player to watch on Friday night was Mia Britton of the NTC. It was her influence on that right-hand flank that it kind of, for me, influenced how much they were in the game. In the very early period, so the first 5 or 10 minutes when NTC had a lot of the ball, Britton was involved a lot on that right-hand side. And as they got back into the game more in the final 10-15 minutes of the second half, it was when Britton was getting more of that possession again once more down that flank. And she was able to bring then the likes of Louise Tana in, who was really involved towards the final stages of that second half. And then, of course, whilst Balcatta went ahead again further in that second half, it was Britton whose sublime play was there along that right, who she drove up that flank and sent that fantastic curling shot high into net to defeat Bennett. And of course, Bakata went and regained their advantage again. But then it was Britain again who was the supplier this time when NTC scored their goal to come back to 3-2 at the end when she turned in that centre channel and laid off for Theodora Muthys to hold off Dopra to shoot home. So whilst it was Balcata's win on the night by 4-2, I was really taken with Mia Britton's performance in at times a really difficult situation for the NTC. But yeah, she shone for me on Friday night.
Thank you so much, Ben. And before we go and cover the rest of the games, Tommy, you also had one last thing to say to wrap up the Balcata NTC match.
Yeah, I was just really impressed with the atmosphere at Grindleford Reserve on Friday night. I think it's actually called the Home Group Stadium now. So I hope I've not butchered that stadium name. They seem to change all the time in the league throughout the years. But what they had is, I'm not sure if it was a night for the juniors or a community night of some sort, but there was loads of people there. There was loads of kids there by the fence looking over, watching the game. There was a sausage sizzle as well, which was very distracting for me in the commentary position because all I could smell throughout the whole game was the waft of sausages, and there was a little bit of residual heat from the barbecue, which was making it a little bit sticky from where we were broadcasting. But it was just a good atmosphere and a good vibe. Balcata have obviously had their new lights installed over the past 12 to 18 months. It looked great on the pictures as well, having gone back to watch the goals afterwards, and you obviously saw them as well, Kalichi. And I just think it's something where you have to give props to Balcata. If it's something that they're going to do on a regular basis throughout the season, the queues for the canteen and the bar were massive. The club rooms were sort of converted into a little bit of a disco area where they had kids in there sort of singing and dancing and having a bit of fun. And yeah, I just want to give Balcata a little bit of credit for the sort of atmosphere that they created on that Friday night. And hopefully it's something that they look to continue doing going forward, having these Friday night games and trying to really cut into those opportunities to maybe keep the juniors hanging around for a little bit after training or after workshops or anything like that. And yeah, more of that from the MPLWA clubs is something I'm very happy to see.
I think that's absolutely awesome. I love the atmosphere, especially around women's games. It feels like such a cool, family-friendly atmosphere. And I was lucky enough to be given tickets to cover the Matildas when they were playing here in Perth. And yeah, those three games felt like everything you wanted to be a part of. And the fact that we're going to have it happen with Balcata, and I know that Perth SC put some night games on as well. Yeah, long may it continue. We'll use that transition to talk about Perth SC, who had a 7-1 win over UWA Netherlands. It says here that Ella Lincoln scored a hat-trick, a double from April Nossant, and Sam Mathers got in the scoring action as well. And that was rounded off towards the end of the game with a goal from Emily Dinsdale. We've talked about her staying at the club. We've talked about the development that she has had. We've talked about her being a terrific dribbler and someone who holds up the ball well. And we get to talk also a goal from Daisy McAllister, as you mentioned, but now we get to talk about Ella Lincoln as a finisher and a hat trick on the weekend. It's exactly what you want from your Dallas person.
Absolutely. And it's not just the technical ability she's got on the ball, because we know she's got that. We've seen over the years that she's very capable of having moments in games where she's capable of delivering. But it's the maturity of the performances which has really sort of grown on me over the past season a bit. She obviously had that breakout year last year where she wore the captain's armband at times last season for Perth late in the season. She was the joint third top scorer in the league with 14 goals. I think only Kagami and Stonehill scored more, and she was level with Tabane by season's end. So, look, the fact that she's now leading that line and she's bringing on these nice partnerships with Flannery. Mathers obviously back from the Dallas Cup now. She's had a couple of games in that front line now and looks like a weapon as well. And I think it's something that Perth have also done in recent weeks, where April Nossant is playing higher up the pitch as well. And Nossant's a player who's been at Balcata in the previous seasons, and she's just a very unselfish player. She'll
just an absolute workhorse as well.
She'll just chase down any lost causes. She's a good complementary piece to sort of, I guess, link up with the likes of Lincoln and Flannery and some of these midfield runners like Wainwright and Mathers and McAllister perhaps as well, who sits a little bit deeper. So they have changed the formula a little bit at Perth, and look, they've certainly got their goal-scoring boots on in recent weeks as well. And let's not forget, that win against Balcatta last week was a really good win. And the week before, they were probably a little bit unlucky not to be 2 or 3 nil up against Perth Red Star before eventually falling to that defeat. So they have been in some quite close games lately. But today we sort of, or yesterday rather, we sort of got to see them really take some opportunities and get some confidence into their game from a goal-scoring perspective as well. And Lincoln was at the heart of all of that.
Yeah, they're starting to kind of find their form. They did start the season with some really tough games, Fremantle, Balcatta, and of course Red Star as well. And now, you know, you've played the teams who will be challenging for the top four, and now you've got the teams who are probably trying to make the top four and trying to stay in the league as well. And so they've got a good opportunity to really see how far that team can go. They're also doing this with Baxter coming back from injury as well. So that's a really good positive thing that you can have this player in the background waiting to come onto the pitch as well.
And we're also hearing that there might be another addition as well arriving in the next couple of weeks. Nothing confirmed by the club yet, but something to be very excited about if what I'm hearing is true, Kelechi.
Well, hopefully it absolutely is, because if we can get more talent into this league, the absolute better. And from UWA, again, they've had a pretty tough week where it's games against Red Star and games against Perth SC. But, you know, the previous week, they didn't score any goals. They got a chance here, took the chance. And I think for them, they've kind of circled the games that they need to be getting points off. And I don't think this is absolutely one of them. So I think it's a good opportunity, like we mentioned last week, to see what is possible, to see what is out there, to see what is at the very top end of the league, and to kind of go from there as well.
I agree. And this is very new for UWA Netherlands, and playing teams like Red Star and Perth is a bit of a step up to what they've been used to playing in recent seasons. They have played Red Star in the cup a couple of times. That's a bit of a tongue twister, but obviously in a one-off game where you can sort of rouse yourself is a little bit different to a league performance, where obviously you're going to have ups and downs and fluctuations and things like that in performance and variance throughout a season. But as you say, Kelechi, these aren't the games that are going to define UWA's season or whether they, I suppose, gauge their progress. Obviously, it's not ideal to be conceding 7 goals in back-to-back games. That's something that I'm sure Lawrence Lewis and the coaching team would love to tighten up a little bit down there. But the games that they are going to be sort of, I suppose, judged on a little more are the games such as their next one in 2 weeks' time, which is at home against Murdoch University Melbourne. And it's a clash between the two bottom sides, and it's an opportunity for either of those teams to get their first win on the board on May 5.
Nothing I like more than a university derby as well.
Oh, absolutely. Didn't factor in that little wrinkle.
I'm just taking a break here. Did Ben also talk about this game?
No, he
talked about Red Star.
He talks about Mum FC and Red Star. So you can maybe just introduce him straight in with that if you want, because we obviously didn't watch it in full, but we can have some thoughts afterwards.
All right. We are also lucky to be able to bring Ben back to talk about the Mum FC Perth Red Star game. So we'll check on his thoughts right now, and then we'll be back to give our kind of thoughts and perspectives from that game as well.
I think particularly impressive in Perth Red Star's comprehensive victory over Murdoch University Melbourne on Sunday. Just have to look at the influence of their Japanese cohort in that game. Those players that they brought in and the work that they've done, not only in selling the club to them initially with last season's imports, but how Rona Kagami and co have been able to attract this year's cohorts, so Monaco Sakiri and Arai Manami. Because yesterday in that game, we had Kagami with a hat-trick. She provided an assist. Sakiri scored. She made an assist. Manami made an assist as well. And I think the thing for me was that incredible goal that they scored involving 10 passes between the likes of Richie, Sarah Cannell, Manami, Sakiri and Andrea Teixeira, that ended with Manami's ball across the right that completely took the Murdoch University Melville defence apart for Kagami to turn home. That role of passes, how it was played, the intricate play between them, the understanding, it was just the team goal to end all team goals. That was Perth Red Star at their sumptuous best. And that is what the rest of this league has got to deal with again this season. But the challenge is there.
Thank you so much, Ben. If anything, Perth Red Star seem to be absolutely consistent, mate. They went to played UWA last week, beat them 7-0. They've now played MFC, beat them 7-0 as well. But just like Ben said, that third goal, the movement, the passing, the way that they constructed that goal for Kagami, it felt a bit like it was telepathy from Red Star. And when you're able to do that and then able to just have Sarah Carroll just nonchalantly control the ball and just lash it bottom corner and keep her streak of scoring alive, it's something that you've just got to marvel at and just be impressed with the way that they keep finding ways to win and keep adding talent to their squad. Because I think from afar, I think we're looking at a side who, dare I say it, feel like they're better than their undefeated season.
Second week in a row that Sarah Carroll scored one from long range like that. And is there a better striker of the ball in the league, Kelechi? I'm trying to think off the top of my head at the moment. We've spoken about Daisy McAllister's long range goal. That was a beauty in isolation relative to what we've seen this season. But Sarah Carroll from a free kick or from a long range at home or the one at Murdoch University Melville at the weekend, she absolutely hammers them and catches them so purely. So, yeah, it's fantastic to see. And obviously, we know she's a technically talented player, but this was the first time really that we've seen the Japanese players, which Carlos Vega Mena has brought into the club, really sort of start to hit their straps together. Obviously, Manami and Sakairi, Ben referred to them a little bit in his piece before, but just that combination with Kagami, and they seem to already have this telepathy with one another, not just the Japanese players, but the whole system in general. And it's so fluid. And where are we? Round four, round five? It's happened in barely no time at all. And considering that the Japanese players were late in as well to the squad relative to the others in the league, they didn't really have a preseason. The two new signings were announced before the first game of the season, I recall. So just the fact that they've been able to gel that all together so quickly really is a marvel. And look, we're repeating ourselves, and we have said this an absolute gazillion times on this podcast over the past couple of seasons, but you just can't praise Carlos Vega Mena enough for the way that he coaches that team. And whenever they lose a player or whenever something seemingly arises where there's a massive hole to fill, Larissa Walsh goes, there's a lot of goals to suddenly find, they find them in Kagami, and other players come and go and young players step up seamlessly, and it's not a big deal. It's like they've been playing in that side for 3 or 4 years. So props to Carlos, props to the Red Star setup. And I don't think any of us are too surprised, really, because I don't think any of us chose anybody other than Red Star to win the league. We knew they were going to be the team to beat. I think they're probably just a little further along than we'd already anticipated, in all honesty.
I think that's the scary part. I think they're this far along and those players have just joined the team. Like, if I go and look at this bench, right, and say Emily Dunn came on after 45 minutes, Jaina Ridley came on after 45 minutes, scored two, Lauren Conti-Dibali came on after 45 minutes, made an impact. Olivia Wood came on after 66. Caitlin Belanca came after 66. These are players that would be starting for any other team in the league. And I think his hardest job this year will be keeping players happy. But I suspect that the fact that they've just got this team atmosphere, this team unity that's there, I think that's going to make it a lot easier to do that. And players are still going to get their minutes. Players are still going to get the opportunity to play. And again, I don't know if this is exactly what happened, but it looks like it says here that they had Katie Ritchie playing in defense. So like, just the depth of that squad, of where you can put players what positions and roles you can put them, and how it's just this really well-oiled machine. It's a sight to behold. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm being absolutely over-exaggerating here, because again, they have played Mum FC and they have played UWA. So you wouldn't necessarily tip those two teams to be the teams that, you know, you show your title credentials against, so to speak. But we've gone through this entire bit and we haven't mentioned Caitlin Douglas, who's been an absolute star so far of the season. We haven't mentioned the fact that Renee Leota is still a box office player who plays as this awesome conduit to keep other players playing. You can play Sarah Carroll at center half. You can play her at nine. You can play her at six. You can play her at eight. You can play her at 10. And she just does a job there for you. Annie Teixeira, you want to play a center half, she'll do a job at center half. You want to play a left back, right back. It's just the fluid nature of this team that makes them such a joy to watch. And yeah, I think other teams should be looking at that and kind of drawing inspiration in terms of saying, look, one, we want to beat them and really test our mettle. But two, this shows you what we can do with some continuity. That's the one. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, English is my second language. But you can see how it's gelled in, and you can see the likes of Conte Dybala and, of course, Gabby Del Bosco. And it kind of feels like they've been in that team and in that system for years as well.
Yeah. And to your point as well, Kalichi, I suppose the hope for the other teams in the league is that they have played three of the bottom four so far this season. So they do still have to play Balcatta in this first round of fixtures. They still have to play NTC in this first round of fixtures as well. And against Perth, Perth gave a very good account of themselves as well in terms of another team, the team they have played, who are in the top four at the moment. So, look, it's very possible that we'll know more about Red Star in a few weeks' time once they have played those games. But it's also very possible that Red Star could be 7 wins from 7 and already many points in front. But the game they play next, Kalichi, is in 2 weeks' time against Fremantle City. And Fremantle City got their first win of the season by defeating Subiaco by 7-2. And you were down at Rosalie Park. So tell us your thoughts on what was, by all accounts, an exciting afternoon down there for you.
Yeah, it was a bananas game. And this was the game that I kind of chalked to see both teams. I mean, we've been talking about Subiaco as a team that's on the ascendancy in the way that they've been playing, and the work that's been happening there from Greg. So, you know, we've kind of looked at them and thought, okay, they look like they're on the ascendancy. And from my comments earlier about Fremantle, I looked at them the first few weeks and thought, how on earth do they score right now? It seems like everything's going through Laura and she's not necessarily having a lot of players to kind of bounce off of. And she wasn't in the team sheet this week. So looking at that game, it started off absolutely perfect for Subiaco. And I think that's the real key thing here is it says 7-2, but there were key moments in this game where Fremantle just put the foot to the metal and really wanted the game. And Mariana Tobain scores an absolute cracker. And it was some really intricate ticky-tack play from Subiaco to get the lead. And you're looking at them and thinking, wow, they're really on song right now. Cass Harvey's playing very well. Frankie Murray, Hawkins doing a lot of good work in there. I was really, really impressed as well as she got hurt towards the end of the game. And hopefully she got hurt, sorry, at halftime. And hopefully she's not too bad. Poppy Thorpe played really well. I think she played for the under-21s before she came on and played for the first team and was doing a really good job at center half. And they had the lead. And you're going, okay, could this be another disappointing performance and disappointing result for Fremantle? But I tell you right now, Clara Harrell was sensational. The work rate that she had, her, Olivia Truman, Sophie Meaden, and Janice Kiama, they were absolutely terrific. I think the entire team, honestly, truth be told, were terrific. But these players were the catalyst kind of driving forward, and they get a goal back from just some relentless pressing from Harrell. She wins the ball high, slots it in to make it 1-1, And then there is a really disappointing clearance from the goalkeeper. But the goalkeeper is a very, very young goalkeeper who's kind of come onto the field and really helping out the team right there. And yeah, she's I think she was the under-16s or under-18s goalkeeper, if I'm not mistaken. But she makes a failed clearance, and that goes to Janice Kiama in midfield. She slots it in to make it 2-1. But at that stage, the game was absolutely in the balance, and both teams had really good chances. Both teams were playing the ball very, very well. And then Fremantle scored what I think was probably one of the best goals you'll ever see in the MPLW. This free-flowing counterattack led by Harrell and finished off by Truman with a couple lovely 1-2 touches in there. They break at pace and they score. And that goal honestly looked choreographed. And if you go and watch that game again, you can see Faye Phillips and the coaching staff pointing forward to one of the strikers as if to say, no, get higher, get higher. Don't come short, get higher, get higher. The ball gets played in, quick 1-2, and they score. And unfortunately, the game kind of took a bit of a pause because there was that injury to Poppy Thorpe as she collided with the goalkeeper. But the second half starts and Fremantle absolutely shoot out of the traps. Sophie Meaden, I reckon she's got two lungs and two hearts, the amount of running and work that she made. There was one moment where she, again, diminutive for her size, just smashes into Marietta Tabane, wins the ball off of her and just keeps playing. And again, this is a former Australian international. And just they just wanted the ball more. And you could see they had a quick corner to start the second half. It gets flighted through. And Kiama runs really powerful, gets the header, and it goes straight to the goalkeeper. But just the power that she wanted, the power that she attacked that ball, it kind of said that she meant business. And then the corner happens again. Exact same thing happens. This time she smashes into the back of the net for her second goal, and that's 4-2. And in a weird way, the game still kind of, that's 4-1. The game kind of still feels in the balance because it's really back and forth. Cassandra Harvey gets on the counter attack, and she scores a terrific question. Cassandra Harvey goes on the counterattack and she scores a terrific goal outside the box, curling it in. And that's 4-2. And you're thinking, okay, can this very young Fremantle side like hang on here? And not only do they hang on, they just go and finish the job off. Harrell scores another one. Truman scores another one. Anna Powell and Mia Yeo come off the bench and they're terrific and combine for Powell to score another. And I've got an interview with Faye Chambers to talk about the game, but just the way that they played, I've not seen a Fremantle, and I said this to them there as well, I've not seen a Fremantle team play with such a fluid attacking fervor. Like, we've seen them play really good games before, but it's always kind of felt like it was individual moments, right? Kat Jukic pulling something out of the bag, Abby Green pulling something out of the bag, Jamie Lee Gale doing something, the power and pace of Tash Rigby going down the wing, sending something into the box. It's never felt very choreographed and just this really free-flowing football. And it was just so pleasing to see. Again, they did have a really tough week for the team, and the way that they bounced back and they bounced back with unity was really good to see. And it really shoved it in my face because I remember saying it to you, I'm not too sure how they score a goal. I'll tell you right now, I know exactly how they score a goal: with power, with pace, with determination, and playing really fast on the break.
I just wanted to ask, because I didn't get to see this game live yesterday. I only caught up on the goals because I was doing A-League men's football. But it was a bit of a surprise to me when I saw that Laura Waltman wasn't named in the starting 11. So we know that she's such a wonderful footballer and she's been such a hub and such a fulcrum of that team. I mean, she's a gold medal winner from last season. So the quality that she possesses is second to none, really, as one of the best players in the league. But I just wanted to ask you how that all sort of looked in the midfield, Kalichi, because sometimes we see it where perhaps you have such a good player, such as a Waltman, who, as a teammate, you're always looking for, and you're always seeking her as the safety pass or the get out of jail ball if you're under pressure. But it feels like perhaps on the weekend there were some players like Janice Kiama and like Sophie Meaden who were maybe not a little more liberated, but they didn't necessarily have Waltman there, so they had to solve their own problems. and it was something where maybe they felt a little more freer. And obviously it wasn't ideal going down behind early to that Tavain goal, but once they did get that run on in the first half and led 3-1 at half time, was that something where you felt you could just see the confidence coming through in those players as they adapted to the fact that the gold medalist in Walton wasn't there on the day?
It's really interesting because, like, I'll try to see if I can land this, but there are moments when Barcelona were playing where it just went to Messi way too much, especially after like Iniesta and Xavi Hernandez had left, right? And you'd see instances where top-class footballers were in really good positions, and rather than shoot, they would try to find Messi, and Messi get closed down, and the chance would break away. And if you go back and you watch that game that they played against Perth, it was, we'll find Laura no matter what's happening. By the way, Charlie Wainwright is absolutely all over, is draped off of her shoulder. Why are we still trying to find her right now? And you can absolutely be in situations where it does cause this black hole where everyone is kind of looking towards that Talis person to kind of get the job done. And the other thing is, it's very Ewing theory. Like, you're a fan of Bill Simmons, so I know that you know what the Ewing theory is. But listen, if you don't know what the Ewing theory is, it's basically the idea that you lose your quote-unquote best player, but then everybody else kind of picks up the slack. Everybody else now gets a little bit more freedom, like Tommy was saying, to play their natural game. The coaches need to do a little bit more to adjust, because it isn't just give the ball to Will or give the ball to Patrick and go from there. And like I said, you could see the freedom from the team. You could see Maya Spadafore like really moving up and down the pitch. You could see Sophie Meaden running. I reckon she would have done about 18 kilometers that game. You could see the drive. And I think this is the other important thing is Carla Herrera has taken a huge leap. She's taken a huge leap from two seasons ago when we saw her at Mum FC, where she was playing against the boys on the Friday and then coming and playing with the women on the weekend. I think the time
with the Glory, training with Glory helps.
Yeah, I think the time training with the Glory has absolutely helped, and she ran the show. But just the way that they all played, they played for each other. They played looking for each other. I cannot stress enough how much freer they played, how intricate the passing was, how dynamic they looked. Yet without them in this game, and it's a game of moments. They scored 7 goals, so it's going to sound really crazy to say it's a game of moments. But there were times when it was 4-2, and it could have been 4-3, and who knows what happens, right? Mariana Tabane scores a goal, it gets disallowed for a foul. If that goal gets given, it's 4-3. Their backs are up, and now this young side's being tested. But just the way that they pressed, the way that they harried, the way that they performed, it feels very Ewing theory. And they're going to have a chance to play against Perth Red Star and see how far that they can go. But I think the other thing that this game did was it made me completely reassess the idea and the expectations for Fremantle. They have had a huge transition. And like I said, they do have, I want to say, 9 players in that squad who are 21 and under. And when you look at Annabelle Leakers, who also was absolutely terrific, by the way, as an experienced campaigner at 22, it shows you how young that squad is. So looking at that, they should absolutely be looking at just kind of setting things in place and then looking at that final third block of the season to really test themselves and see how far they've come.
Yeah, she's a cracking player, is Annabelle Leake. I think I've mentioned this before, but when I first started covering the league about 5 years ago, she was a attacking midfielder / right winger. And she's just made this transformation over the past 4 or 5 seasons where she's dropped obviously deeper and deeper back at the pitch. But she's now this central defender who just oozes confidence. And she's got that ball playing ability from when she was playing higher up the pitch. So she makes smart passes and she is able to make the right decisions to help get her team on the front foot. And she's going to be very pivotal from a leadership perspective, as you say, Kalichi, because it is a young squad, but it's a young squad with plenty of talent. I mean, Olivia Truman is somebody who knows where the back of the net is. I think she got pretty close to double figures last season in the league. Maya Spadafore's come through the NCC system. Sophie Meaden's been there as well. She was at Mom FC as well previously. There's a lot of damn good footballers in that side. And like you say, there's obviously had to be a little bit of retooling that needed to be done. You obviously lose players like Jamie Lee Gale. Remains to be seen whether we see Tash Rigby again. Obviously, she's had some demands with A-League this season, so you never really know whether these players are going to come back. But what that does present is an opportunity for these youngsters to step up. And Anna Powell, another player formerly of NCC, Nicolina Irino, Mia Yeo as well, who's back in the NPL this season also. So there's going to be some good opportunities for these youngsters to play some good first team minutes this season. And if they can use that win as a bit of a circuit breaker and something that they can take forward in terms of that confidence, then I'm sure they're going to be in a pretty healthy position going forward and capable of competing for that top four.
Look, we'll cut now into a quick interview that I had with Faye Chambers after the game, where we talked about the week that was, but also talk about the performance that they had, because yeah, like I said, it was just a cracking game to watch and a cracking performance from that Fremantle side.
Perth Football Podcast, Kalichi Osonwa down here at Rosalie Park. Faye Chambers is next to me, Fremantle City coach, after a dominant come-from-behind 7-2 win in the most outrageous fashion. Tommy and I talked about how the season hadn't started the way that you absolutely wanted it to be, and there could have been some sort of risk of it going the other way, but we talked about needing a big, spirited team performance, and that's exactly what we saw today. What did you say to the team before the game? Because it looked like you were all just together and unified and going in the exact same direction.
Yeah, thank you for that. The girls performed very, very well today, and the message has been that we're working towards a process, as a plan that we've got moving forward, and that the girls have really trusted in that process, and that's come to fruition today. And yet we've had a rough start. The first three games that haven't gone our way results-wise. Some of the performances we've built on each week, I believe so, and then this now cements what we've been working on and hopefully is a start of some big wins moving forward.
Well, look, we'll talk about the players, because it was just some dominant performances. Meaden was terrific. Janice Kiama was terrific as well. Kara Halau was terrific. Olivia Truman, just absolutely excellent. So how's that feel when you just see a plan take shape and you see these players who, you know, in the circumstances really show their true colours and just have such a dominant display where they actually show their skill and personality as well?
Yeah, I think it was a team performance, and I think you've just riddled off four or five players, but I think all 11 players that took field today performed out of their skin, and they performed for each other, which is something that one of our true values is that we're all together in everything that we do. But no, if you have a look at all the goals, the seven goals that came from today, that came from, you know, four or five players. It didn't just come from one individual brilliance, is what we've probably relied upon in the past at Fremantle, but now the big drive is that all 11 players need to play out of their skin and work together, and I think that performance today showed that.
You mentioned the fact that it's kind of been individual brilliance in the past, and you know that's not to slag Fremantle off or anything like that, because you've had some terrific individual players and you've got some great players right now, but you could see the free-flowing football at play here. There was a counter-attack that we've already sent on the socials where I think it's 4.5 passes from one box to the other box, goal. You can see the triggered runs, you can see the movements. It's as if they've just read in each other's minds. So, like, how pleasing is that to see? But also, like, how do you get that going in such a short amount of time that you can see the players? It was as if some of those goals were choreographed goals.
Yeah, listen, the group's quite young. So if you have a look, our average age is around 18, 19 years of age. But they're sponges. So the girls are listening, they're applying it in training, they're working really, really hard week in, week out. And now they're getting the reward from that, from the pitch. And again, we have some really clear principles that we play in possession and out of possession. And they've displayed all of them today. So super proud of their performance.
Well, look, congratulations on the result. Once again, it's the best that I've seen Fremantle play in my time in the NPL, and it, yeah, as a complete team collective, I thought it was terrific. So congratulations and kudos to you and the players as well.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Faye. But yeah, Tommy, I think you had a couple of questions as well.
No, I was just going to ask you on the other side of the coin, Kalichi, what your thoughts were on Subiaco. And obviously, I suppose from their perspective, it would have been disappointing that they weren't able to cash in on getting that early goal and use that to go on and get a result out of the game.
Yeah, man, it's such a weird game to kind of analyze from a Subiaco perspective, right? Because they take the lead and they look all money for it. And the goals that Fremantle score to make it 3-1 are goals that give Fremantle, every goal gives them a lot more confidence. and how they play and how they approach. And you can see them get 5 to 10% faster and stronger and really gun for it. And by the time it gets to the second half, the way that they start the first 25 minutes of that second half, they start like a house on fire. But there are moments in that game where Subi have all the ball, they have all the control, they are playing football. They are absolutely playing all the way out from the back. There's not a lot of long goal kicks. They're playing that into the midfield. They're turning. I thought Salah Zampogna played a really good game. I thought Suckling played a really good game. I thought Cass Harvey was good as well. I thought Frankie Murray Hocking was really, really good as well. And I see it as one of those ones where like goals change games. And because of the circumstances, because of the injury, I think heads would have dropped to start that second half because Poppy was playing a fantastic game for them. I think she's dislocated her elbow and hopefully it's not too long away. And you don't know what that does to the team and to the heads when, you know, they've seen something like that because they had to literally get an ambulance to take her away. But they also had some goalkeeper issues. And I think this is the story of Greg's life where it's goalkeeper dramas from last season. It's kind of come into this season as well. And maybe if you had and again, this isn't putting any blame on the young goalkeeper, but maybe if you had a more seasoned goalkeeper in that position, you might not concede that second goal or you might not concede that first goal. And it was individual errors that kind of let them down to take the impetus off them and put an impetus a little bit more on Fremantle City.
Well, we heard potentially that Monique Todd was going to be playing in goal for Subiaco this season. I wonder why we haven't seen her yet. She's unavailable or injured.
I think she started off with them in the night series, if I remember, but I do think she got hurt as well. And then I think Ashley Riddle also got hurt. And I think this was her first game back. Yeah, I think this was her first game back from injury. So they didn't, like, you're just in a damned if you do, damned if you don't position where it's their third choice goalkeeper. And again, they did a really good job until they came off hurt. But it's just, it's really different. And I think that's where Greg can put his hand on heart and say, okay, that's the absolute fine margins. You know, that's the fine margins where if it stays 1-0 and we get the second, what does the game look like? Because you go look at the stats that Emma Smith has put out there and both teams had a lot of chances. Don't get me wrong, Fremantle had a whole lot more, but I think the game state changes once it's 4-2 and it becomes 5-2. And now, you know, it's really easy to push forward and heads have kind of dropped from a Subi perspective.
Yes, it's certainly something where I think they're going to look back on a couple of the games they've played throughout the course of the season so far. And whilst there have been some good periods in Subiaco games from the bits that I've seen, I think they'll also be frustrated that they've not been able to convert some of those good positions they've been in into something that actually puts some points on the board for them, if that makes sense. So I suppose there's plenty to work with there still. Obviously, having Mariana Tabane back in that team, not just for her ability, but her leadership as well, is going to help a massive deal. And if they can get that stability sorted in terms of the goalkeeping position, then that can only help as well.
Yeah, that can absolutely help as well. So I think it's they don't have a game this weekend in the NPL.
So there's no NPL this week because there is actually a cup round. So just like the men who have Australia Cup action, the women's are playing what looks to be some qualifiers for the State Cup. So I think there's 14 teams in the Hyundai Women's State Cup this season. So I think to get to a final eight or something like that, they need to have quite a few teams with buys and a few teams only are playing games. So I think there's only four games at the weekend or something like that. I'm sure I've botched that in some sort of way, shape or form, but go on, Squatty, go and have a look. Hyundai Women's State Cup, one of the tabs, and I think there's four games this weekend, and the winners of those will go in and join the teams that have a bye, and then we'll get a last eight
I could tell you the fixtures. We've got Mandra City versus the NTC, Saturday night game. On Sunday, we've got Betham's Hammersley United versus Perth Red Star. Fremantle City have a bye. Mum FC are taking on Perth AFC on Sunday. And Balcata Etna versus Sorrento. Oh, that'll be a spicy game. At a home group stadium as well. So byes for UWA Netherlands, buys for Subiaco, buys for Perth SC, and buys for Fremantle City. So a chance for them to all go and either have a nice long weekend or go and catch the opposition in action and try to see if they can get some scouting done. What would you do, Tommy? Are you a go take a weekend off, or you go out there and do some scouting?
Well, if you're talking about me from a personal perspective this weekend, Kalichi, I think I'm leaning towards the weekend off this weekend, considering I've just done three games in 3 days prior to tonight's pod. But ask me that question again later in the week and I might have a different view. It's just that right now, getting out to another game is not on my list at the moment. I'm also going to put myself through Middlesbrough versus Leeds at 3 a.m. this morning. So the football doesn't end for me, Kalichi. I'm an absolute... I have an issue.
Well, we all have issues, and that is that we don't have enough podcasts to do for you, listener. So that is the end of this podcast. You can get on our Patreon. We'll be doing a deep dive from one of the men's games if you're into that sort of things, where we talk about Balcatta and Englewood. We also have a full-time whistle where we cover those games as well. So don't forget to like, rate, review, give us some feedback, send us some messages on the Facebook page, and continue to support women's football by putting your hard-earned cash in there and giving these women some incentives to play the game as well. Any more from you, Tommy Dolman?
Nothing further, Your Honour.
And that is it from me. Be careful and be kind. Take care and all the best.
Bye-bye.
See ya.